plaintiff, Ms. Bass. Unless your honors have many, if any, questions, my argument is going to be rather brief this morning. And it's difficult for me not to comment how amazing it is for me to sit here and observe your honor's stamina and dedication hour after hour listening to and directing these intense arguments. After all these years, it's very inspiring. My client had summary judgment entered against her on a claim of sexual discrimination. She was a janitress in the Joliet public school system. I have 2 points to make, Your Honor. We urge Your Honors that the trial court ignored two critical pieces of uncontroverted evidence at the plaintiff's deposition. She testified that she was assigned a male counterpart janitor's bathrooms for which she had to go down on her hands and knees to clean the toilets because the expensive toilet cleaning machine that her administrators bought did not adequately work, and she failed to keep up to their satisfaction.
So why isn't that claim time-barred? That was from way back. I mean, she eventually is terminated because she's run out of time off.
That's a problem for me, Judge. I mean, when I say that's a problem, I don't have an adequate response to that.
So maybe you should focus your argument on the 2011 termination. I think she is in time for that, but the problem there is seeing where is the differential treatment based on her sex. The school district argues that men as well are released when they fail to meet the collective bargaining agreement's attendance rules.
I'm aware of that, Your Honor. And the second point I was going to try to make, and I hope this is opposite to your question, is that just before all this, as I point out at page 11 of my brief, paragraph 20, soon before all this, she was rated by her supervisor to exceed standards.
Well, I mean, let's assume she's great. I mean, I don't have any reason to think that she wasn't exceeding standards, but if we have plenty of cases that say if you're not there at work, you know, if you're taking unexcused absences, then it is within an employer's right to terminate your employment. And maybe some very good people get terminated in that way. It's not a personal comment in a sense, but employers need somebody who will come. And I guess this collective bargaining agreement had rules for time off, and she went beyond them, didn't she?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Yeah.
I as we all do, deal with the cards that are handed to us. I didn't have the greatest record on appeal. My very worthy opponent is going to emphasize that. But I do feel that, nevertheless, summary judgment should have been denied on the basis of her being piled on, if you'll forgive the expression, with this other man's bathrooms while he went off and hid for the rest of the day not to be found. That's uncontroverted in the record. She testified to that. Nobody controverted that testimony.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Ms. Anderson.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, Shelley Anderson on behalf of Joliet Public School District 86. As Your Honors recognize, the timely facts of this case are simple and undisputed. Ms. Bass's termination resulted from her failure to return to work after exhausting all available leave. This termination was in accord with both school district practice as well as the collective bargaining agreement that governed the terms and conditions of her employment. The attendance policy in the collective bargaining agreement expressly provides that those employees who fail to report to work after exhausting all of their available leave are subject to discipline up to including dismissal. There's no question about that. That is undisputed. Prior to her termination, Ms. Bass was afforded multiple extended leaves of absence, including 2 disability leaves of almost a year apiece, even though the collective bargaining agreement only affords her 1 such leave.
So just the way the collective bargaining agreement works is you have, let's say, documented medical leave, and then you can have 1 year, so to speak?
Correct, 1 extended disability leave.
But then So, but that's in addition to, you know, maybe you have to be off for 3 days because you got the flu and you have
Correct.
A doctor's note.
The disability leave distinguished from sick leave.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, she had two extended disability leaves in addition to all of her other leaves that she had taken. She was warned on multiple occasions that failure to return to work after exhausting all of her available leave would result in her termination. She went out on leave again in August of 2010 related to a back injury, and she was out through November. She did not return to work after her leave had been already expired, and she was given a written reprimand in November 2010 because she missed 1.5 days for an unexcused absence at that time. She came back to work for a short period of time and then went back out in January. And early January, the district informed her that her leave was going to expire on January 5th, and that if she didn't return to work at that time, they were going to be left with no choice but to terminate her. Ms. Bass did not return to work at that time, but the district did not immediately terminate her. Rather, the district administrators met with her on January 13th to try to assess when she could return to work full duty because the district did not have a light duty policy for custodians.
So what was the point of that January 13th meeting? Was there some possible positive outcome from it for her, or was it really just to tell her you can't work here anymore?
No, the purpose of the meeting was to try to ascertain when she might be able to return to work full duty. So the doctor's note that she gave them, I think dated the day before, indicated that she still had a 20-pound lifting restriction.
So if the doctor's note had said she'll be able to come back on January 17th without restrictions, you're telling me it's conceivable the district would have said okay.
It's quite conceivable, especially in these instances where they've done this before for her in the past. And while she may have been given a reprimand, I don't know if she would have been termination. But unfortunately, at that meeting, she wasn't able to provide them any information as to when she might be able to return to work, and the doctor's note didn't include any such information either. It was for that reason that, in accord with the school district practice and the collective bargaining agreement, the district terminated her. Her gender played absolutely no role in this decision. And the district court's grant of summary judgment for the school district should be granted. There's no direct or circumstantial evidence of discrimination. As the district court noted, she presented no evidence whatsoever in the underlying proceedings. There's no question she wasn't meeting.
I do have a question. You mentioned Rule 38 sanctions in your brief, but there's no separate motion filed. So it's hard for me to understand what it is you're asking for in the way of a sanction.
Certainly. We asked for sanctions in this case because we believe that the appeal that she filed was frivolous.
Right.
And I think that, as noted by counsel during his presentation, when he is unable to respond to the court's question with respect to the timeliness argument or unable to respond to the court's question with respect to the fact that other males were terminated for the same reason she was, supports our argument that sanctions are warranted in this case.
Right. But one of the reasons Rule 38 indicates that a motion is to be filed so that we could know what it is you're asking for. Do you want a sanction in the way of a fee award, or do you want an admonishment, or what is it you want as a sanction?
I believe we were leaving it in the court's hands to determine what they believed was appropriate. I mean, I think the purpose of the sanctions is obviously to award the party who had to go through the appeal, frivolous appeal process, so that would be in the matter of fees, if that court deems that appropriate. But the other purpose of sanctions, as I understand it, is to deter counsel from bringing appeals that have no basis.
Thank you.
I would just like to close with saying that in addition to not being able to obviously prove that she was meeting our performance expectations with respect to attendance, as I think this court understands, she certainly cannot establish that any similarly situated male employee was treated more favorably. The evidence is clear that three men were terminated for the same reason as her between 2008 and 2011. And most significantly, she admitted in her deposition that she doesn't really believe she was terminated because she was a woman. So unless the court has any further questions, we ask that you affirm the district court's finding.
All right, thank you. Anything further, Mr. Jesser? You might want to address the sanctions point that Judge Tinder brought up.
As I argued in my rebuttal, I take on a lot of tough cases, and it's chilling when you have a passionate client who it's very difficult to say no to then face a risk of sanctions where you believe in your heart that you have a good faith case.
Well, I have to say, I was troubled by your reference to her race in your reply brief. It had nothing to do with the case whatsoever up to that point, and why the request for sanctions against her had any bearing on her race is just eludes me.
Well, I'm very sorry if I offended the court. I did not mean to.
But the problem is, even a criminal defense lawyer will have to make an assessment of a case, and the responsible thing to do if that assessment causes the lawyer to think there's no merit is to file an Anders brief and to explain to us, the court, why it is that's what counsel's assessment was. And on the civil side, even more so, people don't understand the law. That's why you go to law school and so on. And you, the lawyer, have to explain to the client. Maybe a case is worth filing, but it's not worth appealing. Maybe a case isn't even worth filing, and it can be very hard news to receive, but that's the way the law is sometimes. So I'm not sure just because the client wanted you to do it is enough of a reason.
Well, I would ask not to be sanctioned. I have filed many Anders briefs in criminal work. I did not know it was appropriate in
civil
work.
Well, you don't file the appeal. If you think that there's no good faith argument to be made, it's entirely permissible not to file an appeal.
This is a woman who, I don't mean to repeat myself, felt aggrieved and wanted to exercise her appellate rights. I wanted to help her.
Okay. Anything else from anybody? All right. Thank you very much. The court will take the case under advisement and will be in recess till tomorrow.